This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Angelina Jolie was brought to tears while talking to the rape victims of the Bosnian War during her visit to Srebrenica.
I read more and I learned more, and I was just so taken by how little I knew, how little the world speaks about it, and I felt compelled to put the story together. And then with casting everybody from the area, from all different sides of the conflict, who are all personally affected by the war, it was an education every day in humanity and in unity, and also getting to know a culture.
Assalamu alaikum, greetings of peace. How are you guys doing now? You probably haven't heard these names.
Mr. Karadzic.
Slobodan Milosevic.
Ratko Mladic.
We're going to give you a history lesson. A history lesson on one of the greatest, if not the greatest, genocide in modern times after World War II in Europe.
They committed the worst single atrocity seen in Europe since the Second World War.
Which you probably haven't heard about. Now, what do all these have in common? They were practicing Orthodox Christians. But do we blame Christianity for these evil lunatics? No. So we have a lot to talk about on this week's episode with the former president of the Muslim Bosnian community of Chicago, Dr. Hashim Ćosević. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Now, we wanted to, recently there was the Don't Forget or Creating Awareness of Srebrenica. This is where almost 10,000, 8,000 plus innocent human beings were killed. And rightfully so, people bring up in certain communities certain evil, sad events that have happened. In the essence, and we're going to do the same thing, of creating awareness, not forgetting something like this, so it doesn't, we revisit this history so people don't forget, so we can help, God willing, prevent something tragic like this happening again. And you recently, I mentioned that you were the former Muslim Bosnian president of the community during a time when this evil was happening from, what was it, 1991 to 1995, 1992?
Well, in Bosnia from 92 to end of 95, but it started in Croatia in 91.
Yeah, so around that time. So those are the three points that we want people to walk away with. Creating awareness, understanding this great, being aware of this great genocide. Many people don't even know about it, right? And people, even Bosnians, are forgetting about it. So not to stir up any hate or animosity, but to really contrast it with Islam. Also to contrast it with current day events, to point out the hypocrisy and the double standards that are here. Because I said, what do all these three? These are the key players: the former president of Serbia, you know, also of the Serbian Republic in Bosnia. What was it, Radovan Karadzic? And they call him the butcher of Bosnia. And these people were just, these people were in charge of that genocide, and they were Orthodox Christians. But we don't blame Christianity, do we?
No.
No. So tell us your part.
At that time, it happened that I was the president of Bosnian American Cultural Association in Nordbrook, which is a suburb of Chicago. And as the violence started in Bosnia in April 92, we were involved in humanitarian helping our people, suffering people of Bosnia. So during that time, we sent 20 containers of humanitarian aid to Bosnia. We also initially I helped to resettle the refugees that were coming from concentration camps from Bosnia, and there were some like 14 concentration camps in Bosnia that were created by the extremist Serbs in Bosnia. And these people, we helped them to resettle here. We sponsored them and then brought their families here, and we also worked with helping wounded people to get medical care here in Chicago, in Cleveland, and we sent financial help over there also to families.
Yeah,
it was just every day, working and working to help those people.
Now, this is clearly outlined as a genocide.
Genocide took place in the heart of Europe, in Bosnia-Herzegovina, in 1995. It was the worst atrocity on European soil since World War II.
There's no debate about it. This was ethnic cleansing at the highest level. I mean, you had the top president, Slobodan Milosevic, involved in this. You had, and now you had the other. Tell us about Radovan Karadzic.
The international arrest warrant issued for Radovan Karadzic, to leader of Europe's most brutal experiment in racial purity since World War II. The International War Crimes Tribunal has charged him with separate counts of genocide, crimes against humanity.
Who was he?
Radovan Karadzic was the president of the so-called Republika Srpska in Bosnia.
Which is in Bosnia. And then this butcher, they call him the butcher.
Yeah, Slobodan Milošević initially was the leader of the Serbs in Bosnia, the extremist Serbs in Bosnia.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I noticed you said extremist Serb because this is not against the Serbian people or, you know, Croatian or anybody. I mean, because, you know, we're looking at the individuals, you know, same thing. You have, you know, extremists in all different, you know, religions and whatnot. And like we started off, this is not blaming Christianity, blaming the whole Serbian, you know, community. But you have people like this who are obviously, you know, charged with crimes against humanity, who are responsible for killing. Are these numbers, I heard it's somewhere between 100,000 to 200,000 people, innocent people who are killed, over 2 million people displaced. I mean, innocent men, women, and children. They had rape camps, death camps.
Serbs executed men, women, and children. The river became a mass grave. But 24 years on, the memory of horror is being deliberately erased. And nowhere is it more obvious than here. Ramza Muhic was raped here at the Vilina Vlas Hotel. Other survivors say it was used as a rape camp. Ramza says she was attacked by Milan Lukic, a commander in the White Eagles militia, later jailed for mass murder.
Bosnian Muslim men and boys were selected for murder, not only on account of their Muslim faith, but also because of their gender. The women suffered a different fate. Srebrenica was the culmination of a brutal campaign of ethnic cleansing across Bosnia-Herzegovina, in which 20 to 50,000 women and girls were victims of genocidal rape.
Yes, some estimates are over 200,000 people have been killed, and over 2.6 million people are displaced. There are refugees within the Bosnia and outside the Bosnia.
Let's paint this picture now. So this war is happening, but some key points is the war, it starts. So you were telling me that the Serbian army was the third or fourth most powerful army in the world?
In the Europe.
Which?
Third.
Third.
Yes.
Now, was the Bosnian army, there a Bosnian army?
It was not a Serbian army, it was a Yugoslavian army.
Okay.
But then later, when the conflict started in Croatia and Bosnia, it turned into a Serbs-controlled army, so it became Serbs' army, okay? Because 70% of the generals in the Yugoslavian army were, officer generals were Serbs. So they took control of the army, and Bosnia did not have the army. The Yugoslavian army was the army of all people in Yugoslavia, and Bosnian people never thought that Yugoslavian army will commit these crimes that they did. They believed in their army and they supported their army, and people served in the army, and they were proud to serve the army. Mm-hmm. So they never imagined that this army will commit the crimes that this army did.
Yeah. So they had no weapons to defend themselves. Because that's your God-given right to defend yourself, so you couldn't even defend yourself?
Some weapons were available locally, but then the Yugoslavian government was very wise, and within the last year before conflict broke in Bosnia, they took around and they took all the weapons from people that they had, so they basically ended up with no weapons except some hunting guns and some little pistols and things like that. You know, that's how they started it. and started building army within the neighbors, you know, within the neighborhoods.
So this this president, and then the president from within, and then this top general. Obviously, these were people who wanted to exterminate Muslims. They were racist. I heard that there was the nationalism. They were really pushing this nationalism. Songs were being sung, you know, and just pumping the people up. Kind of contrast that, like today, we see some of that, you know, this nationalism, like, you know, creating the other.
Back in 1987, Slobodan Milošević was addressing the Serbian Communist Congress, and at that time he was saying that Serbia is not getting enough from the Yugoslavian Federation. You know, they deserve more. And then he also said that Serbs should live all in a one big powerful country called Greater Serbia. So there were most of the people living in that. In Serbia at that time were Serbs, ethnic Serbs, but also there were some ethnic Serbs that were living as a minority in Croatia and Bosnia, and some of these were extremists. You know, they were blinded by the Serbian nationality, and they accepted this with enthusiasm. You know, and that's how things started. He woke the nationalism within. These extremists.
Yeah, and that's what we see.
And another thing he said, wherever, so their motto is, wherever Serbs live, that's Serbia.
Yeah.
That's what these, you know, Serbian nationalists are believing in.
Uh-huh. Was that kind of, you see that white supremacy kind of, you know, what we see somewhat today, but this is another form of that racism, that this is, when now this contrasted that to Islam. When you look at, you know, the original sin, what we see was that that arrogance, the original sin of the devil, Shaitan, when you see, like, when out of respect, when God had ordered Shaitan to bow down, he said, I'm better than him. You know, this racism,
right.
And that's the root of all evil. So we can see that here happening, taking it to an extremist extent where ours is better than yours, and fighting this, you know, where Prophet Muhammad said this stinks, this nationalism, right? And this extreme version of it that actually led them to go ahead and commit this genocide, to want to wipe the whole Muslim Bosnian community off the map.
Right. They were not concerned about democracy. They were planning. Slobodan Milošević, the former president of Serbia, he, together with the top military leaders of Yugoslavian army, they made plans and they organized this genocide in Bosnia. And their main thing was to eliminate Muslims from certain areas in Bosnia, especially in eastern Bosnia, and along the western part of the Drina River, and that's where Srebrenica was, on the Srebrenica, and then Goražde and Žepa, and they were called safe zones of United Nations, but Serbia, they wanted to take over and occupy all those three safe zones of United Nations, and that was their strategy to make it part of Serbia.
Mm-hmm. We're going to go ahead and take a break, and even in we'll get into that next. Even in the safe zone, this is that what recently we had the event with. What was it? Never forget Srebrenica. Is that what it is?
Yes,
where over 8,000 people died. And they were supposed to be safe by the peacekeepers. The UN was there. But right under their watch, all these 8,000 plus innocent human beings were systematically massacred. Is that right?
Yes.
We're going to continue from there and revisiting this so we can learn from it and hopefully to prevent something evil like this from happening again. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
They took 248 UN peacekeepers hostage, and in July that year, they committed the worst single atrocity seen in Europe since the Second World War. They overran the small Muslim town of Srebrenica, which had been designated a UN safe area, and they went on an orgy of mass executions.
There was an assault on Grajde, there was assault on Jepa, and there was this terrible assault on Srebrenica. To this day, you know, the numbers are staggering. 8,000 or so Muslim men and boys slaughtered just because they were Muslim.
Back here on the Dean Show. Okay, so we covered, you have nationalism. Okay, I'm an American, I'm Bosnian, I love my country, I love my background also. My parents are from Bosnia, and I thought this is something important because other communities, as I mentioned, they bring up, you know, certain events that have happened to them in the essence of preventing something evil like that happening to them again. And not to stir up any hate or animosity, because you have, you know, people from Serbia, from Croatia, from these walks are really good, you know, really good people. And but then you have extremists, radicals in every, you know, community. And then we brought up the point that these were Orthodox Christians, and the Orthodox Church actually is on record saying that, you know, praising the Radovan Karadzic as one of the most prominent sons of our Lord Jesus Christ.
The Greek Orthodox Church described him as, quote, one of the most prominent sons of our Lord Jesus Christ working for peace.
But you never really hear, do you? Have you heard? You don't hear much connection back in the media or through any of the news reports saying that these were radical Christians. It's kind of like what you do as soon as someone's a Muslim, you know, Islam is on the witness stand. You know, it's a showcase, like this is Islam motivating them and whatnot. But you don't, have you heard that ever, the contrast being made?
No, I never heard Christian terrorists. It is usually Islamic or Muslim terrorists. And first of all, there is no Islamic terrorism or Islamic terrorists, because Islam does not teach terrorism. It teaches peace and coexistence and tolerance. So, you know.
Or how about when you hear this radical Islam? What do you say? They say radical Islam. Because obviously, if we're going to play that game, they were practicing a form of radical Christianity. But we don't blame Christianity, right? This is as radical, because you have footage right now. People are seeing, you know, they're in the church, right? You know, with the priest sitting, and this is like a crusade. Yeah. This was like almost, one can say this was a modern day holy. Yeah. What people, they would say, there's no such thing as a holy war, but to these people, this was a holy war to exterminate Muslims.
Well, if Christians are true Christians, they would follow the message of Jesus Christ, and he was teaching peace and love, you know. But these extremists, you know, in Bosnia, they were doing opposite of what Jesus was teaching. So they were not really Christians, because they were not following the Christian message, which is peace and love.
Loving your neighbor.
Yes. You know,
they were mass killing.
What was Jesus teaching? You know, when you slap him in the face, he turned the other side to slap him again. But these people, no, man, they were being unprovoked, and they were doing, you know, crimes and trying to eliminate Muslims from most of the parts of the Bosnia. You know?
Now, do you have, like, we see it's very sad and unfortunate that you have, you know, you have whole stadiums. You have people when recently, not too long ago, Radovan Karadzic and some of these, I think got 40 years. He got convicted for crimes against humanity, for genocide.
Guilty of the following counts. Count 2, genocide. Count 3, persecution, a crime against humanity. Count 4.
Guilty on 10 out of 11 counts, a litany of cruelty.
Murder, a crime against humanity.
Here he was today, inscrutable but guilty of atrocities committed in a war that cost over 100,000 lives, created millions of refugees, and became the darkest chapter of post-war European history.
And you see people held them as icons.
zdravlje našeg generala, heroja srpskog, Ratka Mladića.
I mišljenje o Ratku Mladiću neće nikad promeniti. On je za nas bio heroj, bit će i ostaće heroj.
Ratko Mladić, called Europe's biggest killer since Adolf Hitler. 1995 in eastern Bosnia. Serbs are fighting Muslims.
Koliko ti je godina?
Don't worry, Mladic tells this boy, we'll look after you. A lie. Within hours, the Srebrenica massacre began. Around 8,000 Muslims murdered. At the same time, Mladic led the four-year siege of Sarajevo. The longest siege in modern history. 10,000 died from Serb shells and snipers. The International Court of Justice indicted Mladic for genocide and crimes against humanity, but couldn't find him. At first, he hid in plain sight, attending weddings, soccer matches, visiting restaurants. And then, a $20 million bounty on his head. He disappeared until today.
Today, we arrested Ratko Mladic.
You know, whole stadiums, you know, they would be chanting their names. That's the scary part. But have you had dialogue with some Serbians or people from this area who have come? Because if someone does something in the name of Islam, we'll be like, hold on, that he doesn't represent Islam. These people don't. People who do such evil acts, who are doing opposite to Islam, will be the first to condemn. We become almost professional condemners, right? But have them come up and condemn these acts, this genocide, which, like we said, is the biggest genocide since World War II, after the World War II.
Some of my own patients condemn these things, Orthodox Christians from former Yugoslavia.
Nice.
They condemn these things. And also, we need to also say this. There was a whole brigade in a Bosnian army that was formed during those 3 years of war, 3.5 years. That was called Slavna Pravoslavna, which means it contained all the Orthodox Christians that were fighting in defense of Bosnia.
The whole
brigade.
So they weren't with the radicals.
They were defending Bosnia and they were not extremists.
So you had good. Yeah. You had these good Serbians who were stepping up, fighting along with the Muslim Bosnians against the evil that was being perpetuated against them.
And there were some also that I know from a little town that I came from, eastern Bosnia. They were running away from Bosnia into Montenegro to hide so that they don't go into Serbs extremist army. You know, they didn't want to fight against their Muslim neighbors and hurt them. And you know, so there are people like that.
And that upsets me when sometimes even some Bosnians will try to blanket statement and have that hate. And Islam doesn't teach us that against all Serbians. Islam doesn't teach us that.
I had instances where patients walk in my office and, while waiting in the waiting room, they will sometimes say, all Serbs are same. So I had to stop them right there. I said, look, wait, you are wrong. It's not true. You cannot make judgment and judge the whole group, because I know definitely there are some good, Serbs, and they were even in the Bosnian army fighting against this aggressor, and against these crimes, against the invasion of Bosnia. So you cannot do that. Don't say that. I also have some patients that don't agree with you and are not extremists. So, in every group of people, you have a good and you have a bad. And but in Bosnia, the sad thing that most of the Orthodox Serbs were following their nationalism, their national leaders blindly, without questioning them, without
that's what you
opposing their wrong ideas and things like that.
So that's wow. That's how it shows and illustrates how important it is to have good leaders. What impact a leader, and with this nationalism, and I heard the songs and pumping people up, and we see that with the politics here today, contrasting it, creating this manufactured fear, right? And this manufactured hate, like Hollywood often say, that's manufactured. There's a legitimate fear. You fear, you know, some thunder you hear, but then you go to the movies, that's manufactured, that's Hollywood. So creating it like Muslims are terrorists, they're here to, you know, Sharia, you hear all this nonsense, right? And now you're scared of your neighbor, and you see that, and then the guns start coming out, and you start looking at these people as less human, and then you have a genocide happening, right?
Most people that do those things, actually, they are ignorant about the subject they're talking about, and they are also arrogant, you know. Yeah. And but in this case with Karadzic, he was an educated psychiatrist, but, you know, it seems like he needed some help himself.
He was a psychiatrist, yeah, a doctor, psychiatrist, supposed to be helping people.
And he was his college education, he was going to Sarajevo, he got educated there, he lived there, and instead of taking care of that city, he was shelling it, you know, unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of mind is that? I mean, a criminal mind.
Well, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with more revisiting history so we can, God willing, prevent something, a travesty like this, one of the greatest genocide to happen after World War II on European soil that you probably didn't know about. We're revisiting it, educating you on this lost history, almost forgotten. Don't go anywhere.
Let's not forget that this was a slaughter of civilians, not a traditional army against army. It was a completely unlevel playing field, right down to the fact that they were perched on the mountains surrounding Sarajevo, and the civilians were in all these valley towns and cities who were being sniped, who were being shelled at bread lines, at water lines, you know, crossing the road, children even, women, old men.
Back here on the Dean Show. All right, so let's paint a picture. Sarajevo is sieged. You got snipers. There's like mountains around. And people going to get some bread, getting some food, because it was a scarcity, right? And
yes.
You had events. Is that true that these snipers were ordered to just shoot innocent civilians?
Yeah.
Methods included the bombing of civilians, first in the capital, Sarajevo, and then in dozens of other places.
For the next 3.5 years, the world would watch the siege and bombardment of Sarajevo, massacres in marketplaces, sniper and mortar attacks on civilians, and concentration camps filled with Muslims. The goal was to carve out an ethnically pure Serb statelet.
Yes, yes.
Can you elaborate on that?
Well, for example, people were standing... people were at the market, you know, buying and selling things, and there will be at one time they shelled the market, and a lot of people got killed there, a lot of people wounded, you know, and but then they say, you know, the Serb leaders say, no, those were Muslims that were shelling their own people to evoke sympathy from the from the, you know,
from the world community,
from the world community,
yeah.
So that they will turn against the Serbs. I mean, that's complete disinformation, you know.
Yeah.
And then another instance in Tuzla, they also did the same thing like that. They, you know, they were shelling people in you know, outside in the groups, and kill and maim many people, you know.
Yeah. Another interesting thing is... go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and people are staying in a bread line, you know, and they will shell and, you know, and wound many people, like kill and wound many people like that, so...
Another interesting thing is, I mean, it's a God-given right that you have to defend yourself, your home, your family, and is it true that there was a... Who was it that suggested or actually brought up the idea that it passed into the arms embargo? Was this from the army?
Well,
how did that come about?
Well,
that meaning that the Muslim Bosnians, they weren't even allowed to have this God-given right to defend themselves with arms.
The UN had banned arms sales to the region to reduce the violence. This left the Muslims practically defenseless against the Serbs.
Well, Croatia and Slovenia declared independence on June 25th, 1991, the Yugoslavian army moved in Slovenia and was fighting there for a couple of weeks and then moved out into Croatia, and slaughter of innocent Croats who were Catholic Christians started there, and according to some estimates, over it was in 10,000s that of those people were killed in the next year. And then the United Nations, under the pretext of preventing escalation of the war in their region, they evoked arms embargo on September 26, 1991. But that did a great injustice to Croatians because they didn't have army and they were just forming the army and trying to defend themselves against the Yugoslav army that was, armed to their teeth, And then after about 10 months, in April 92, the Bosnia had a referendum and they approved become independent.
Yeah.
Independent country, and people that came out to vote, it's like 90% of people voted for the independence of Bosnia, but some of the ethnic Serbs didn't like that and started creating violence in Bosnia, and after about 10 months there was a peace agreement in Croatia, and that peace agreement stipulated that now Yugoslavian army, now Serbs army, to move either to Serbia or Bosnia. And United Nations did not disarm the Serb army, allow them to move with the heavy weapons into Bosnia. They chose to move to Bosnia. So, you see, the United Nations, they should actually disarm the Serb army right there. And if they did, these atrocities would be preventable in Bosnia. But then when the war shifted into Bosnia, they applied the arms embargo on Bosnia too, even though it was, and United Nations recognized Bosnia as independent, but they applied the arms embargo on Bosnia, people who were armless and couldn't defend themselves, had no army. I mean, what a hypocrisy, And 50 members of the Security Council that voted for their arms embargo, I'm sorry to say, but even our own country, United States, voted for an arms embargo and never voted to get rid of it. So all the things that happened in Bosnia, all those countries that voted for arms embargo, they are also indirectly responsible for all the war crimes in Croatia and Bosnia.
So it's kind of like, okay, we're not going to come to help, stop this genocide, but we're not even going to tie your hands and not let you defend yourself.
Yeah, and sad but true. Why this arms embargo was established? The Yugoslavian army officers asked the United Nations to make arms embargo on former Yugoslavia because it. They had arms. They need no arms. Yugoslavian army had arms up to their teeth.
Third strongest army in the world.
Third strongest army in Europe and fifth strongest in the world at that time.
Yeah.
So they didn't need the arms. And to have arms embargo there is basically to prevent the people, the victims who they victimized, to prevent those victims to defend themselves against the aggressor.
Okay, tell us this now. You're expecting the UN... the peacekeepers there, they're also armed, right?
Yes.
They're supposed to, you feel kind of safe, right? You feel like, okay, I guess this town, Srebrenica, is supposed to be controlled by the UN. And what happens there? I heard, okay, so they ended up getting massacred right under the nose of the UN.
While the world called the Serbs' destruction of Muslim communities ethnic cleansing, Richard Holbrook called it genocide. Bosnia's Muslims endure 15 more months of heartbreak and slaughter. The UN established what it called safe areas, but without enough force to make them safe. Thousands of Muslims sought refuge in Srebrenica. And in July 1995, Serbs overran the small UN force there, and they captured the town.
In Srebrenica, over 8,000 innocent people. Describe that. What happened there? Yeah, that was with the...
UN wanted to... they were asking for 6,000 UNPROFOR forces. UNPROFOR supposed to be like a peacekeeping forces in Bosnia. And they asked for 6,000 men, but they only got 450,000 and 450 soldiers in there. And no country wanted to risk their soldiers, but, you know, Holland, the Dutch government, they accepted their responsibility, and they put 450 of their soldiers in there with lightly armed, with no heavy, real heavy artillery, yeah. Okay? And those zones were called safe zones, and... Mm-hmm. There was not supposed to be shelling from outside into those zones. But the shelling, the Serbs continued to shell Srebrenica and other so-called safe zones like Žepa and Goražde. They continued to shell and to destroy civilian objects, homes, buildings, religious structures.
The Serbs attacked parts of the capital, Sarajevo, to force the Muslims out. They destroyed mosques, they burned books, and they systematically raped Muslim women and girls.
And to kill innocent civilians, and to create terrible living conditions for those people within.
Yeah.
You know, lack of food, lack of heating, lack of electricity, lack of everything,
mm-hmm.
You know. Srebrenica was concentration camp in as a safe zone under the protection of the United Nations. They were concentration camps. They were not protected. You know, it was just a concentration camp.
What if someone says, okay, this is war? You know, when you talk about they actually had rape camps.
Other survivors say it was used as a rape camp.
We know that women were selected for an unimaginable campaign of sexual violence, slavery, and forced impregnation. The exact figures are not known because shame and stigma prevent many from speaking out.
They had people in concentration camps who were being beaten, starved, tortured. If someone says this is just the consequence of war. Right, they were doing the Muslims were doing the same thing. Have you heard this argument?
Yes, and
what would you say?
The aggressor is trying to equalize victims with the aggressors, which is totally that's disinformation that they are spreading around. Bosnians did not go and attack Serbia or Montenegro. Bosnia was attacked by the Yugoslavian army. And the extremist Serbs who were called Chetniks, and they were killing everybody that was not Serb, okay, mm-hmm. Including Serbs, those who were not extremists and were defending Bosnia and were fighting against them.
Who weren't? It seems like the Christian Crusaders way back when who would even kill Christians, yeah. Who weren't practicing their form of Christianity. Yeah.
This is basically modern crusade.
Yeah. But you don't hear that mentioned. Again, I just want to stress the point that we don't blame Christianity and pointing out the hypocrisy and double standard because people expect Muslims to be professional condemners for everything. So also we should be fair and balanced, right?
Yeah.
And call out certain things and be just and fair in analyzing these things. And we know that this does not apply to Christianity, but you have radical elements also from among some Muslims, right? But you can't blame Islam. Let's go and contrast that with what we believe is the last and final messenger sent to mankind, the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, the rules of engagement in combat. There are so many situations, but it just outlines the mercy, even, you know, in combat where you're not allowed to kill innocent men, women, children. Prophet Muhammad saw a woman who had been killed. He was angry. you know, let alone rape camps. This would be the first thing, you know, on the day of judgment, if someone killed innocent blood. A Muslim is scared to have any innocent blood, be it from a innocent Serb, innocent Croatian, anybody, you know, who's innocent in these things. It's different when someone's pointing a gun at you, coming with a machete, knife. You have a right. That's, you're in combat. But now, raping women, sniper, you know, shooting people in the bread market. Does Islam give justification to this because it's war?
No. There's no justification to kill innocent people. It doesn't matter if they are Muslims or not Muslims, because Islam teaches, you know, it's right in Quran. You know, Allah Joshanu says that if you kill one innocent human being, it does not say one innocent Muslim. It says one innocent human being, it is like a killing the whole world.
Yes.
You know? So,
these rules of agape, that's the thing that's incredible. Like, yeah. the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, who's a brother to Jesus, Moses, Abraham, they all brought the same message: worship the Creator, not the creation. You know, this is the same, the Creator who created us all and called us, you know, to be good to our neighbors. And I think, do we take some responsibility here that we also went away from calling people to educating people on Islam, educating people, doing the da'wah? You follow me? How much accountability, self, you know, analyzation on us as Muslims, some accountability, right? Is there anything? Again, you can't now blame yourself for this person killing and maiming you, but what would you say to prevent something like this happening again, for external, right, for the world to know, but then internal? What's our duty, you know, for Bosnians, for Muslims, you know, educating, you know, humanity, what, you know, doing more doubt? What would you say is
well, we should educate the future generations about the truth,
yeah,
that happened. And we should also educate our future generations not to be naive, but to be alert and to be prepared for things like this in the future, okay? Because people in Bosnia were not prepared. They were mostly naive people. Even during those 10 months of war raging in Croatia, the Bosnian leadership was naive and made a big mistake with the current president at that time. They made a mistake of not preparing for the war in case it moves in Bosnia, and arming them, arming their people, because the Bosnian leadership was saying, it's not, many times they repeated this, it is not our war, it is war between Croatia and Serbia, you know, which is very naive, man. You know, your neighbor is, you know, being attacked in Croatia and being killed and slaughtered and raped, and you are saying it's a war between them, it's a war between them and not you. Hey, that has a potential to come over into Bosnia. What are you doing about it? Are you preparing yourself to defend yourself? You have a right to defend yourself, so get armed. You had 10 months.
Yeah.
They didn't do nothing.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back just briefly. We're almost out of time. A few more points. But when I was saying, like, Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, where he clearly said there's no killing of innocent men, women, children, monks, people, priests, people in places of worship, tearing down places of worship.
No destruction of property.
Yeah.
And trees. And,
yeah.
You know.
It's amazing. You see these things clearly outlined. And then on the other side, you see some of the most horrific evil happening, and it saddens the heart, you know, that these things have happened. And again, I reiterate, this is not to stir up, you know, because many people, they'll take these incidents and try to, you know, use this as fuel and fire to create animosity. Is that what
some people benefit from that? It could be economically, it could be you know, position-wise, to keep their, you know, power and all that. So people will do things like that, you know.
But that's not our intention here today. This is clearly not our intention. It's, like I said, it's to revisit, to create awareness. And you got inspired. There was an imam who actually because the Srebrenica, the anniversary was like a few weeks ago, right?
Yes.
And there was an imam, a local imam, who was talking about this. Kind of touched you. Can you talk about the points that he had mentioned?
Yeah, you see, July 11th is the date that you know, people try to remember what happened in Srebrenica. That's the day when Srebrenica fell to the Serbs. And then during the next 24 to 48 hours, over 2,000 people have been slaughtered. You know, that's how extensive and quick and brutal it was. And then in the next 5 to 7 days, there was another over 5,000 people have been killed and slaughtered on the way as they were trying to escape from Srebrenica. Mm-hmm. Towards Tuzla. Now, during this imam, our imam, he was talking about, at that time he was like 17, 18, and he was very young, and one of his assignments was as a reporter to go to Tuzla airport and report about these people coming from Srebrenica. And he said, you know, he will never forget some of the things that he saw, how these people were arriving. They were going through the hilly, woody mountains, you know, for days, trying to escape from Srebrenica to a safe area in Tuzla. It's like some 60-some kilometers, okay? And it took him days. And he would see people, you know, they were scared. They were hungry. They were, their clothes were torn. They were without shoes. It was just a, you know, terrible situation, you know.
Have you heard people who have gone through it and survived? Because anything that has happened, a catastrophe like the, you know, an evil like this, usually there are good. Ultimately, you can see some people, they don't see, but sometimes, you know, some evil might happen in your life, but then a greater good happens, right? So God, out of his ultimate wisdom, he allows certain things to happen for a greater good. And we see a lot of people, have you talked to them, that before this happened, they really weren't focusing on, they weren't serious in life. They really were just, you know, living life without any purpose. But this really, this tragedy forced them to wake up, to see that, man, I can, you know, all this can, these blessings can be taken away. I need to take life seriously. You follow me?
Well, a lot of people before this conflict in Bosnia, they were basically running after the material world, okay? And neighbors were competing with neighbors, you know, who's going to have a better car, who's going to have a bigger house, and things like that. Very little attention was given to the Creator and what will happen when I die, you know?
Yeah.
And so during this conflict, a lot of people realized, look, you know, they were happy. They didn't care if they lost everything, you know, all the material possessions, as long as they saved their head, their life, you know. So many of them realized, and many turned back to God and became good believers, you know. But then some of those, once the conflict stopped, they turned back to the old ways, you know.
Yeah.
But a lot of them stayed true to what they turned back to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They became good Muslims, good believers, and they stayed on that path.
Yeah,
they learned a lesson, and but some will never learn the lesson until it is too late.
Do Orthodox Christians from that area, do they know? And that was our lack of educating. Do they know that we as Muslims love Jesus? Do they know that we believe in him as a mighty messenger? Do they know that there are so many commonalities between us?
I doubt it, because even
you doubt that they know that?
I doubt they know that. Maybe some, maybe their Priests probably know that, but they don't teach them about it.
Yeah.
Because it's not in their interest. Okay. Mm-hmm. They will probably lose the job if they do that. So, I mean, even many Muslims in Bosnia don't know that. You know, if you mention Jesus, it's like, wow, you know, it's like, and they don't realize that Jesus was just another great prophet of God, you know, and that he was also a Muslim and teaching Islam and teaching message of submitting your will to the will of God, that all prophets were teaching same message.
Uh-huh.
And submitting your will to the will of God, when translated in Arabic, is means Islam. That's all
that's
it is.
That's it, right?
You know, yes. So, you know, so, and you cannot be a Muslim unless you believe in all prophets of God, including Jesus, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can't be.
So if Muslims are learning their faith, okay, and practicing their faith, and then teaching others, non-Muslims, you know, that we love Jesus, maybe the relationship would be better with other non-Muslim people.
Mm-hmm.
Because they will realize, hey, they also revere, respect, and love Jesus just like we, you know.
Yeah. We just don't worship him as a God or a literal son of God, right? Because Jesus never called people to worship himself, but he called people to worship God.
Right.
And that's amazing because that's what I'm talking about, the internal, right? To be sincere with ourselves and look internally, what we need some adjustments. We need to make some adjustments to start living really submission to the will of God, right? Not forgetting our Creator, right? And then wondering, you know, calamities happen, and then what do you expect?
Yeah, and you know, probably all Christians in former Yugoslavia don't realize that Jesus was a Muslim.
Yeah, we're almost out of time. You told me once that the Bosnians there, they had they were called before the Bogobo. What was it called?
Bosnians. The history of Bosnians or Bosnian Muslims goes back to like. 7th century when one group of Christians, Orthodox Christians from Bulgaria, to avoid persecution because they were believing their belief was very close to the Islamic belief, like those early Christians, you know, that followed the message of Jesus very closely. So, and they believed in one God, and also on some of their tombstones there was a moon, and you know, just like Muslims have a crescent, and so they moved from Bulgaria west to Bosnia into mountainous. And Bosnia is a three-quarter mountainous country, so they were being called Bogomils. Bog means God, and mil dear. So they were called people dear to God. And the Catholics from Croatia were constantly attacking them and trying to catholicize them, make them Catholics. And then from east, the Serbs were attacking them, trying to make them Orthodox Christians. They resisted that successfully by moving into mountains and defending themselves. Then when the Ottoman, when the Turks came, the Ottoman Empire, and especially Sultan El Fatih, he brought Islam to Bosnia back in 15th century, and they were very tolerant of these people that they found in Bosnia. And they allowed them to practice their way, their religion, and you know, they did not force them to become Muslims. So when these Bogomils saw how tolerant Turks were with them, they voluntarily embraced Islam. There are cases that you know, on one field, in one day, over 60,000 of these people embraced Islam.
This is in history, it's documented.
That's in history, documented.
Wow.
You know, so. Most of the Muslims in Bosnia come from Bogomils, and from these people that came from Bulgaria. And then some are from the Turks that stayed in Bosnia. Okay, when the Turkish Ottoman retreated back to Turkey after 1878 Berlin Congress. Okay, and then Some are local people, you know, Catholics or Orthodox Christians that embrace the Islam because they believe in their message or they want to keep their position, you know, in their society.
Yeah.
So, but those are minority numbers, you know. Mm-hmm. These extremist Serbs, they hate these Muslims, and they call them traitors. You know, they believe that that Muslims before were Orthodox Christians that embraced Islam when the you know, Ottoman Empire came into Balkans.
We're just following the organic, the true way of Jesus and Moses and Abraham. They all submitted their will to God. That's all we're doing.
Yes,
now, if there's there are a lot of, because the message of pure monotheism, it resonates with the heart.
Yes.
And if there's, what advice, and we got to curtail it, we got to cut it, we went a little bit over time, but for any Serbian, for any Croatian, any Slavic from that part of the world who's not stuck on, okay, Islam doesn't call you to you don't, if you become a Muslim tomorrow, do you have to stop being a Serb? No, you're still a Serb, but you're...
Yeah, you are, your ethnicity is Serb.
Serbian,
it's
yeah.
It's okay.
But if they want to be right...
No, ethnicity is Serb, but
yeah.
Nationalism is Serbian.
Yeah, okay. So if they want to be right with God, they don't believe that Jesus, praying to Jesus, and many people reject this, right? But they just kind of go along with the flow. They're like, I don't believe, you know, Jesus died for my sins. I don't believe that he was the literal Son of God, but I believe in the God that Jesus worshiped. And I like this concept of worshiping the Creator, not the creation. You know, and I want to look into more of the life of Prophet Muhammad. I believe he was the final messenger. They did a little research, or they watched some of the Dean shows. And what advice? But you know what? It's very difficult.
Well,
we had an individual's name is Goran. I won't mention his last name. And others who have spent a little time with Muslims, and they... It connects because the message is believable. It's based on proof, but they get a lot of backlash from the community. What advice do you have for them?
Well, you know, I tell these people, let's analyze and see what Jesus was doing. You know, and I say, you know, this, and let's see who is better Christian, you or me. And they say, how can you be a better Christian when you are a Muslim? You know, how can you be better Christian than me when you are a Muslim? I say, well, let's analyze this. Let me ask you a few questions. Who did Jesus pray to? And they say he prayed to God. Okay, I said, okay, but who do you pray to? Who do most of the Christians pray to? Most of them pray to Jesus. How did Jesus pray? You know, there are pictures of him. I mean, not pictures, but drawings of him kneeling down on the ground on his forehead and on palms of hands praying, okay? That's how he was praying. And how Muslims pray. That's how Muslims pray, you know. And Christians pray on their knees or standing, you know. And then I asked them, okay, did Jesus, was Jesus circumcised? Yes, he was, the eighth day, okay. And all of his disciples were circumcised, you know. And, you know, and all early Christians were circumcised. Now, all Muslim boys get circumcised, you know, but most Christians don't get circumcised, especially like in these you know, Serbs and other people. You know, they don't believe in that. The difference is in Western countries where they practice hygiene. Okay.
Yeah.
Then I ask them, okay, did Jesus eat pork? You know, they say no. You know, they know that. You know, and I say, yeah, okay, Muslims don't eat pork. Okay. But most Christians eat pork. So
how do he greet people?
And yes, that's another thing. I asked him. I said, you know, what was his greeting? They don't know. It was a shalom aleikum, which you can check this. It's in Luke chapter 24, verse 36, and you can verify this yourself. Okay, and Muslims greet each other salam aleikum, which means peace be upon you.
Mm-hmm.
So when you but Christians don't say salam alaikum to each other, peace be with you, you know.
Yeah.
So you see, Muslims are doing all they are actually following teachings of Jesus. They doing what he's doing, saying what he is saying,
calling on the God he's calling.
Yeah,
he worship.
Muslims are not, you know, Jesus is not worshiping himself. Now he was teaching his followers to worship God who created him.
Yes.
But why most Christians are worshiping Jesus when he did not worship himself?
Yeah.
They're not following his teachings, you know?
Yeah.
So Muslims are following all of his teachings.
Yes.
So who is better a Christian now? If we decide that according to the if we judge who is better a Christian according to what you're following, are you following teachings of Jesus? Then you know Muslims who follow his teachings, they are better Christians than Christians because they're not following his teachings.
But this is just very interesting. It's even translated because he spoke Aramaic that he called on God by the name Allah.
Yes.
This is it.
Yes.
So if anyone's sincere, they'll see the truth is there in submission to the will of God, which is Islam. And a Muslim is simply one, like you said, who submits their will to God.
And Arabic Christians, they call God Allah.
Yeah. This is it. Okay, so a person, if he's Serbian, Croatian, whatever, first they would you say they got to be sincere with God and not be worried about the national, because that's not nationalism, not going to save you on a day of judgment.
If they say they are following, they are good Christians, then they should be honest with it. They should find really what Jesus was teaching and follow his message, and not following what church is teaching them.
Yeah.
Because church is teaching them things that many things that Jesus did not teach, and they are contradictory to teachings of Jesus.
Is Islam open to all the Christians? Is it open to all the Croatians? Is it open for them? They can accept it anytime?
Yes. And anybody is welcome to learn about Islam and to embrace and submit their will to the will of God.
Yeah. I want to thank you very much. This was a very exciting show. Again, reiterating, revisiting, not to forget. So we can help prevent this genocide, which was the greatest genocide on European soil after World War II. Last closing comments and suggestions for the people listening who are out there, and they have, many, they've been affected by the hate machine. They hear a lot of negative things about Islam, What do you like to tell people who've been affected by the hate machine?
I would say that they need to do their own research and find the truth. And one of the reasons why God sent us to this earth is to improve relationships with each other and to help each other. And we should work on that.
Dr. Ćosović, thank you very much. Hvala što ste bili s nama na ovaj program. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. I ask God for forgiveness for our shortcomings.
Amen.
And hopefully this will be useful information and it will stimulate those who don't know about this situation to do a little more of their own research and to learn a little bit more about it and maybe help in future to prevent such things wherever it is.
Amen. Thank you so much. And thank you for tuning in to the Dean Show. And I hope you got to benefit revisiting this history so we can prevent, God willing, through awareness, something tragic like this, some evil like this happening again. And if you're a Serb, you're a Croatian, whoever you are out there, Islam is open for all of mankind. You just got to be sincere with yourself and ask the owner, the creator of mankind, for guidance. Start there and continue to tune in every week here to The Dean Show, and we'll see you next time. If you have any questions, concerns, call us 1-800-662-ISLAM. We're here to help, and we do this out of the love. We'll see you next time. Peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.
Allah, there's only one God, and Jesus was his messenger. Allah, la ilaha illallah. Allah, there's only one God, and Muhammad is his messenger. Allah, la ilaha illallah.